Hi, I'm Josh, and welcome to the Wild Nature Photography Podcast, the podcast that talks the art and craft of nature photography. It is the 21st of April, 2022, and this is podcast number 42. And yes, I know this podcast is really overdue. I think it's actually been more than a month now since I did my last podcast, which was an update from the field on Ellesmere Island. And things had just gotten away from me with all the travel that I've been doing. After I finished up in Ellesmere Island, I went straight to Svalbard for my Svalbard winter expedition, and it was my intention to try and podcast between those two expeditions. But you know what they say about best intentions? Things just got in the way. Office work on the computer, emails, catching up on all my correspondence because I was offline whilst I was in Ellesmere Island. So I just basically ran out of time. And then when I got to Svalbard, I had an awful lot to do before we could get underway with our expedition. And maybe I'll talk a little bit about that later, what just took up all my time. But that was actually a fantastic expedition as well. And I'll have more to say about that, both in the written form with a trip report on my blog, but also also here in a podcast, I think, as well, because I'd like to talk a little bit about that. And as I said, I may touch on that later in this podcast as well. The topic of today is going to be wrapping up Ellesmere, the Ellesmere Island expedition. I know I did quite a long podcast from the field, but we were still only, I think, about a third of the way into the expedition at that point in time. And there was still a lot that happened after that. So I want to kind of just go through the whole trip, talk about it, put the numbers around it in terms of view of how it went and what my thoughts are going forward on Ellesmere as well. So, I mean, the expedition ran in March of this year. It was an all new, it was really a test expedition to Ellesmere in winter with a friend of mine, a fellow nature photographer from the UK by the name of David Gibbon. We'd been planning this expedition for more than 3 years. It was a long time dream, really, of both of us to try and find and photograph what is nearly the mythical white Arctic wolf in winter. Very few photographers have ever actually travelled to Ellesmere, and even fewer have actually managed to photograph the wolf in winter. Vincent Mounier, the French photographer, is probably the most famous of them. He's done some really beautiful work on the Arctic wolf in winter. And if you're not familiar with his work, you should be checking that out as soon as you finish this podcast. So our expedition was originally scheduled to run in 2020, but of course, with the COVID pandemic, that saw us delayed until 2022, and we were finally able to run the expedition this March. For those of you who are unfamiliar, Ellesmere Island is located in the far north of Nunavut, which is in the northeasternmost region of Canada. It's one of the most remote and isolated landmasses on Earth. I mean, very few people ever visit this far north, and even fewer do it in winter. And of those few that do visit, you know, the small town of Grisfjord, which only houses about 120 people, even fewer will venture north outside the town on a winter expedition. I mean, just to get to Grisfjord, it's 5 flights from Ottawa. So it's Ottawa to Iqaluit, Iqaluit to Pond Inlet, Pond Inlet to Arctic Bay, Arctic Bay to Resolute, and then finally a twin otter from Resolute to Grisfjord. Now, of course, in winter, the flights are never certain, and we were delayed a day in both Iqaluit and Resolute on our way to Grisfjord due to poor weather and cancelled flights. But we expected that might be the case. I mean, it's the Arctic in winter. So we built in some extra days for that that eventuality. And we actually put a dedicated charter on standby from Resolute to Grisfjord as well in case of further delays. So it was nice to have that as a backup plan. And it just really goes to showing how important things like having a backup plan are when you're putting together an expedition like this and being able to work with logistics on the fly, because things are constantly changing in the Arctic in winter. What seems like a really certain plan in 1 minute is definitely not the next up there. And the weather is fickle and changes frequently. So particularly that last flight from Resolute to Grisfjord, because it's a twin otter aircraft that is operated by Ken Borick through Canadian North, that flight in particular is subject to a lot of changes and delays. So having a dedicated charter on standby was, I think, worthwhile. As it was, we didn't need it. We were able to get in the day after we had originally thought we could. So that worked out okay. So I guess the next thing I really want to say on this expedition is that, to my knowledge, this is really the first dedicated photographic expedition to Ellesmere from a commercial perspective in search of the white wolf in winter. And I say from a commercial perspective because both David and I took clients with us. And it was an incredible life-changing experience for me personally. And I really want to take a moment and thank all the participants for their efforts during the expedition. This sort of extreme expedition really requires 110% commitment and support from all participants. And I'm very grateful to them for making it successful and safe. You know, if things go wrong in these regions, it can be very, very difficult to evacuate somebody. There is no rescue helicopter nearby. So anyway, I want to reserve an extra special thank you for our local Inuit guides who also made this expedition possible. I mean, their dedication, their commitment, their literally supernatural ability to deal with the cold really made this expedition a reality, and it would not have been possible without their assistance. There just is no way we could run this sort of expedition without their local knowledge. It just wouldn't happen. So, look, our intention for this expedition was to head north from the small community town of Grisfjord via snowmobile in search of wildlife. I put wildlife in inverted commas there, but really we were hoping to find the white wolves. Now, we knew that there was a potential for polar bear, there was a potential for Arctic hare, ptarmigan, Arctic fox, and of course some other bird species as well, but really our primary focus was the wolf. As I said, Grisfjord's a town of about 130 people, 120 people, and it really doesn't have a hotel. It just has a sort of small shared dorm style accommodation that really served as the launch point for our expedition. We deliberately kept our itinerary open and flexible so that we could adapt to the weather conditions we experienced during the trip. I mean, you never know what you're going to find or experience on an expedition such as this. So flexibility and adaptability are really two key factors, I think, to the success of any trip like this. So the expedition team consisted of myself, David, three clients, and four local Inuit guides. So there were nine of us in total. Well, now, there was meant to be a fourth client, but sadly we lost one last minute to a COVID close contact. Marco, what can I say? I'm so sorry. You were dearly missed. We wished you were there. We toasted you on several occasions. And look, we hope to catch up with you very, very soon. We really did miss you very much. I guess let's just shift up gears for a second and just talk about equipment, because an expedition such as this into the remote wilderness in the Arctic in winter really requires a lot of equipment, food and fuel. So we used four snowmobiles, all pulling sleds that allowed us to take all the equipment we needed for our time in the field. And our first planned stop was a very remote hut on the edge of the sea ice that has been used by local hunters for years. It's about 120 kilometers north of Grisfjord, so it's quite the snowmobile drive, and the cabin is really, it's really little more than four aged walls and a roof with a small diesel stove for heat. Now, as it turned out, we actually ended up using that cabin as a primary base for the entire expedition. Although it's really, really basic, it served as protection from the elements and the cold, and it was a, you know, it was a place we could sort of escape from the wind a little bit as well. So it served its purpose really, really well for our expedition. And as you'll be able to see if you read my trip report when I publish it, I'm going to put the little note that we wrote up on the wall of the cabin. It was not graffiti. Everybody does it who visits that cabin. So I'll put that in there as well, just as a bit of a memento and record. So we had originally planned to head as far north as Eureka, but it became quickly apparent once we'd set off from Greece that we couldn't carry enough fuel. And we also had a terminal issue with one of our snowmobiles that meant we had to abandon it about 8 hours into our expedition, blown piston, I think it was. So losing a snowmobile on day one, you know, really limited our options. And we made the decision to use the hunter's cabin as a base and to try and let the wildlife come to us and search locally when possible. Now, as it turned out, we did little searching via snowmobile because experience quickly showed us that all of the wildlife was extremely shy of the engine noise and would often, or not often, it always would run before we got close to it. So instead, what we did was we tried to remain as quiet as possible in the hopes that we would get the wildlife to get curious and to approach us voluntarily. And this strategy mostly proved successful. We did undertake a full day trip to Vendenfjord, where we found muskox and Arctic fox. And that was probably our coldest day as well in Vendenfjord. I think the temperature out on the frozen sea ice there, I talked about it being about minus 45, I think, in my last podcast, but it was actually colder than that. It was actually about minus 55. It was so cold. In fact, it was the first time I've actually experienced air temperatures that the air is quite literally frozen and hanging in place. It's really quite an incredible experience. I can't really put words around, you know, or accurately describe the feeling of temperatures on the human body once they dip to those sort of levels at minus 50, it's just brutal. There really is nothing you can do to keep the cold out. It's just insidious. It gets into everything. Very, very difficult to stay warm. Now, Temperatures during our expedition ranged between minus 32 and somewhere south of minus 50, plus wind chill. We don't know exactly how cold it got, as our thermometer bottomed out at minus 50 and the mercury was significantly below that on multiple occasions. So we're guessing air temperature fell to somewhere around minus 55 or below, probably around minus 65 with wind chill. So that's very, very serious. I actually ended up with some frostbite during the expedition, and so did David as a result of these temperatures. Look, mercifully, we had very little wind chill most days, and we were blessed with consistently pretty good weather. But obviously in these sort of temperatures, it's critical to survival to be properly dressed and equipped. You can't sort of go half at it. We were very aware of the potential for frostbite, so we took a lot of precautions. But as I said, even so, both David and I ended up with some frostbite. David on his nose and fingers, and me actually under my chin, where I had a gap from my balaclava. So we had fantastic photographic encounters with Arctic hare during the expedition. Usually in beautiful evening light. We were very fortunate. We discovered a burrow in a den area about a kilometre's walk from our cabin, and that proved consistently to provide outstanding opportunities for both Arctic hare and ptarmigan, actually. So as such, we were able to time our photographic sessions for the best light of the day. Whenever you can do that, you're going to make great images. We also had some really nice opportunities with the Arctic fox, including Arctic fox on the remains of a muskox carcass as well, which was pretty cool. We did see live muskox when we were out on our trip to Vendum Fjord, but they were at too great a distance to photograph and were just extremely shy. We couldn't get anywhere near them. And I think that's just as a result of all the hunting pressure that there has been, in Ellesmere for many, many years now. So very difficult with the muskox there. We did have two separate sightings of the white Arctic wolf, but they did remain elusive photographically. I mean, I personally spotted two wolves moving from right to left in bad light at the limit of my vision through my binoculars. About day four of our expedition, I talked about this in my last podcast. There was a low fog at the time, and I could not be sure if they were wolves or bears. Initially, I thought they were wolves because of their lope, but when they separated with one wolf staying behind the piece of ice and the second moving toward me, they appeared much more like polar bear. That's very typical behavior for a mother and a cub, where the mother will stash the cub before she begins to stalk her prey. You know, I was alone. I was about 2 kilometers from base camp. I hadn't taken the weapon, so I decided, I was going to be safe. I decided I'd head back to camp. In hindsight, of course, I wish I'd stayed. As it would probably have proved an incredible photographic encounter with the wolves. Look, I did return on snowmobile to investigate. I found the fresh wolf tracks and scent marking, but the wolves had disappeared, very much like ghosts. And I think that's why they really are known as the ghosts of the Arctic. They're very difficult to find, and they do have a tendency to sort of just disappear. The second sighting for the wolves was actually in the early morning, I think it was, before sunrise on our last day. So two wolves had come in quite close to the muskox remains to scavenge, but unfortunately they moved away before we discovered them, and they were at binocular-only range by the time we dressed and prepped. It's one of the downsides, I guess, to Arctic winter photography is you can't just grab a camera and run outside when the temperature is minus 50. It takes quite some minutes to properly dress and prepare to go outside. I mean, even just a call of nature requires a few moments preparation before you sort of emerge from a warm sleeping bag. So because of that, we didn't actually get a great photographic encounter with the white wolves, unfortunately, but we did get fantastic ptarmigan, fantastic Arctic hares, and really fantastic Arctic fox too. That was all absolutely, really unexpected, really unique. We also had some very wonderful cultural experiences with the Inuit. I hadn't worked with them before. I'm not normally a cultural photographer, but I really enjoyed that sort of unexpected bonus. We always knew it was going to be extremely tough to travel there in winter with snowmobiles and sleds. The transit across the landscape was really very rough, very bouncy, and to be honest, it was really tough. The extreme cold was really only part of the difficulties of an expedition at this time of year. The difficulty of navigating the landscape, I think, really proved equally challenging to the level of cold. It's extremely uncomfortable to ride in the back of a sled. I forget now the name that the Inuit call those sleds, but it's really a wooden box. If you can picture a wooden box with like a sleigh underneath it, and a canvas tarp over the top that you sort of are riding in, that will give you some indication. There's no protection from the cold. There's no suspension. There's nothing to protect you from every bump in the ice. And it is really quite hard going. I guess Also, now that I've completed this expedition, experience has probably shown me that the importance of getting as far north as possible of Greece really can't be underrated. There's just so much significant hunting pressure around Greece Fjord, which really results in skittish, hard-to-find, hard-to-photograph wildlife. And sadly, this region of the Arctic still allows and even actively encourages the hunting of polar bear, caribou, and muskox. And as photographers, we want to get as far away from that pressure as possible to give ourselves the best possible opportunities. So we're going to be making some adjustments to the expedition for 2023 based on our learning experience. Now, mostly these adjustments relate to things like pre-prepared fuel drops that mean that we can travel further, reducing our group size to just 2 clients per trip. Effectively, we're going to split the planned expedition with 4 clients into 2 separate trips of 2 people plus 1 liter per trip. And that's going to significantly lower the weight we need to carry per expedition, reduce burned fuel, and allow us to travel further more easily. It'll also further reduce pressure on the wildlife when we have in photographic encounters. So streamlining 2023 expeditions should allow us to reach Eureka area, where we're going to be far away from any hunting pressure, and that should greatly increase our chances of photographing the white wolf. And that was really why we did a test trip this year. It was to try and find out what we needed to do to optimize our chances. So we know we need to get further north. We know that that's going to be extremely difficult, and we need to have pre-prepared fuel drops. And we know that we need to travel in a smaller group. So we're making all of those changes for 2023. If you're booked onto 2023, don't worry. I'm going to be in touch with you very soon to discuss all of this, and we'll catch up on Zoom meetings to run through the do's and the don'ts, et cetera, et cetera. So 2022 was, look, to be honest, an absolutely incredible experience. It's really left me wanting a lot more of Ellesmere, and I'm really looking forward to 2023 to revisit this remote island in winter. It is one of the last bastions of true wilderness. It is not for the faint of heart or those looking for a luxurious photographic experience, but it is, I think, an incredible life-changing experience to visit this remote community and to head out into the wilderness there and be truly on your own in the Arctic in winter with the wildlife. And to have those kind of encounters is very, very special indeed. So, look, 2023, both expeditions, as I said, we're splitting them. They're both sold out already. I am going to be returning in 2024. If you think you've got the right stuff and you're keen, you'll want to know more, just drop me an email to register your interest. There's no obligation. We can have a discussion about the physical requirements, perhaps suitability as well. 2024, we'll also only be taking 2 people per expedition. I am also going to be doing a dedicated polar bear expedition in Ellesmere Island, both in 2023 and 2024. 2023, I'm taking just 1 person. That's already sold out. 2024, I will try and do 2 back-to-back if I can. I'll have more to say about that, you know, as we get closer. That's still quite some way away. So that just wraps up Ellesmere Island. I will have a full written report, as I said, up on my blog, I hope in the next few days. I want to get a few more images processed just to put with the report, or maybe I'll just put the report up and add the images later. I'm not sure. I'll see how I go. I'm still catching up on a lot of correspondence after getting home to Australia, and I am actually only home for a few weeks before I'll be leaving for Zululand and Africa. Couple of other things I just want to touch base on. I just published my photo of the month for April. It's a photograph from Ellesmere. It's of a rock ptarmigan in winter plumage. It's one of my favorite images from the expedition. Jump over to my blog and check it out. It's http://blog.jholko.com. I'll put a link in the show notes as well. I've actually written a little bit about why I like that photograph and why I think it was quite a difficult photograph to make. Actually, it turned out to be quite an easy photograph to make, but the concept of what I was trying to do, I think, is quite difficult. And that is to use natural flora to really sort of talk about the wildlife itself. So using delicate flowers to sort of imitate the delicate nature of the ptarmigan. It's a photograph I'm very happy with. It's up on my blog. You can check that out. Last thing for the day is I want to just make a quick note that I'm selling off a bunch of photographic gear. I just have too much. I've got some doubles of lenses. I've got a bunch of new RF gear, which means I need to clear out some old gear. I had a 600 F4 and a 70 to 200 F2.8. Those have actually already sold this morning. I've got a 16 to 35 F4, a 24 to 70 F4. And an 85 1.4. So if any of those are all Canon mount, EF mount, if any of those are interest to you, just drop me a note and we can correspond via email. So before I move them on. Otherwise, I'll probably just pop them over to eBay, I think. So I think that's about all for now. As I said, I just want to wrap up Ellesmere Island and put that expedition to bed for the year. Don't forget, if you want to support the podcast, you can buy me a coffee. There's a link to that in the show notes as well. That's very, very much appreciated. As I've said before, it doesn't cost a huge amount of money to run the podcast. It costs me around about $20 to $30 a month in hosting fees. But all contributions are greatly welcome. It really does enable me to keep doing this. So if you want to help out, buy me a coffee, you can do so. The link's in the show notes. I think that's it. We'll wrap it up for today. I'm Josh. It has been the 21st of April, 2022, podcast number 42. I look forward to seeing you out in the field soon. Take care.